We're in the company of Gerard Deering, Ombudsman. Recently we've been contacted by people who are upset, say, for instance, when you can tax your car or when you can attend a council office to do certain business. You know that opening hours are changed or reduced. Is that the type of query that you could deal with?
Well, those kind of matters, it is a matter for each public body to decide what access it provides and when its offices are open. But at the same time, I think you point to a slightly worrying trend that I think has happened after COVID, where it is fine that services moved online and it's fine for people who can access services online. But I think it's important that also local authorities and other public bodies would provide reasonable access to people at reasonable times who are unable to use these services online and who want to conduct their business. So we could certainly look to see and talk to the local authority or the people concerned to see, is the access that's being provided reasonable and are people being afforded an opportunity to carry out their business?
Do you have any power, is the right word, I don't know, over the RSA, the Road Safety Authority, or is that a semi-state?
We can look at complaints in relation to all public bodies, but I suppose it's not that we have authority or power over them. What we do is we look at complaints and then we make recommendations, and we hope that those would be implemented.
All right, okay, because it'd be interesting, because you might get a number of contacts in relation to the RSA, because we had people during the snow here. It was terrible here, Ger. I'm not asking you to comment on individual cases, but people were unable to get their car tested because they couldn't get out of their driveway or retested, or they couldn't go and do the driver theory test because it was too dangerous. They were snowbound, but they had to forfeit their bill, their charge, their money, because the RSA will only allow you to cancel for such reasons when there's a red weather alert. So I don't know if that's something you might be interested in hearing from people about.
Well, look, we'd always encourage people to contact us so that we can get the details of any complaint they have and establish whether or not we do have jurisdiction and can deal with it. So it's best that people would contact us on 100%. ombudsman.ie. And we can look into those issues and see whether they are matters that fall within our jurisdiction.
Okay. Now, just briefly then, because I don't want to take up all of your morning, of course, what kind of complaints then are you receiving about public services in Donegal, or complaints in general? You've outlined very useful information, might I say, as it relates to the cross-border treatment scheme. But is there a trend in terms of complaints in this county? Do you have access to that kind of a breakdown?
Well, the trend is very similar, in fact, to the rest of the country, in that we've had an increase in complaints in Donegal, but we've had an increase in complaints right across the country last year. And similarly, 2021 was an increase on the previous year. So I hope that's an indication that people are becoming more aware of our office and more aware of what we can do, rather than a general decrease in service standards, because a big part of what we want to do is improve service standards, not just deal with individual complaints. And these are really right across the board. I mean, for example, we have an increase in particular in housing complaints. Now, that's probably not surprising given the number of people who are now on the housing list and in need of housing. And it's important to point out, Greg, that we can't actually secure houses for people because we're not the housing authority. But we can look at how people are treated when they're on the housing list, or, for example, in relation to HAP applications, that's the housing assistance payment. We sometimes receive complaints where people find it slow in accessing the service, or indeed where they're looking for their discretionary payments which can be made under that, and sometimes people feel they're not being treated fairly under those type of schemes. So it really is about any kind of public service. Obviously, we also have received complaints in terms of the health area in Donegal, the same as in other areas, and again with the backlogs and the number of people waiting for treatment, it's not surprising. But again, we look at, we can't deal with things like clinical judgments. In other words, we wouldn't second guess a doctor's work, but we can look at how that person was treated in terms of accessing the services they're seeking to access.
Right, okay. All the information is at ombudsman.ie, isn't that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. And as I said earlier, we'd always encourage people, if they're in doubt as to what we can do or can't do, please contact us. We're very happy always to help people with inquiries. Indeed, we had over 6,000 inquiries over each year in the last 2 years. So we're happy for people to contact us. And as I mentioned at the outset, very often we can resolve the complaints pretty quickly and informally.
Just a quick one. As you would know, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are currently in living in unsafe homes trying to access a government scheme. In some cases, adults and children's health being very detrimentally affected with black mold and all that type of stuff. Is there any scope within your office for people to raise those concerns with you, or even maybe the fairness of a scheme that's been introduced by the government? I mean, are those the type of things you can investigate, I wonder?
Well, again, for example, that MICA scheme that has just recently been introduced, there's an independent appeal panel appointed by the minister in that scheme, and then decisions in relation to eligibility or whether somebody is granted or what they're granted under the scheme can be appealed to the High Court. So there's very specific grounds of appeal set out in legislation for that, which we couldn't interfere with. That said, if somebody is applying under that scheme and, you know, wasn't receiving a response, or there was an issue with the administrative manner in which they were treated, it is probably something we could look at. But certainly in terms of the actual scheme itself, and the what people might be entitled to under the scheme, that would be something for the authority and also the independent appeal panel in the first instance.
Gerry, listen, thanks for your time. I really appreciate your patience as well, waiting for us while we took the news. Take care of yourself. Now, as you would be aware, Gardaí Cork are investigating all of the circumstances surrounding the death of a man in his late 80s following an incident at Mercy University Hospital yesterday, Sunday, the early hours of yesterday morning, I believe. Anne Mooney is Southern correspondent with the Irish Sun and joins us now. Anne, a very good morning. This certainly is a story that shocked the nation, I think we can agree.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the one place that you kind of feel that you would be safe in is a hospital, Greg. And for this to happen in one of the country's leading hospitals is just absolutely astounding, really. The circumstances that led to it are equally astounding, because this was an 89-year-old man, Matthew Healy from Barings, who was in a 6-bedded ward, and one of the other patients there was a 32-year-old man who in a totally unprovoked attack seriously assaulted him, and resulting in his death. The alarm was raised by other patients in the ward, and a staff ran to help Mr. Healy, who was described as frail. They actually encountered a violent man who was out of control, so much so that one of their own staff, one of the male nurses, actually had a finger broken trying to subdue him. So, you know, there are a lot of questions to be answered. The IMO this morning, the nurses' organisation, actually called for a full security audit of all hospitals this morning, saying that there hadn't been a security audit done since 2016, and that it was now time for the HSE to complete such an audit of what measures are in place in each hospital in the country.
And as you can imagine, and even here locally, you know, we've had lots of people messaging in. There's pretty much a lot of local knowledge as to how many security staff are on in our local hospitals day and night, and people making comment as it relates to the size of campuses and is that sufficient. Like, this is opening up, as you've already indicated, a much broader conversation now. The INMO were involved, but I think also the public now are starting to ask themselves, you know, would they feel safe? This is the type of emotion that people feel after such an incident.
Yes, and we have had major incidents in some of our hospitals. We had a situation here in Cork where a young girl who was in a ward with men was allegedly sexually abused by one of those patients. We've had other incidents, you know, and as I say, the one place that you should be able to feel safe in is in a hospital ward. And certainly in this case, there are many questions to be answered as to how somebody who was obviously had some sort of problems, and who was allowed to be in a ward like this with elderly patients like Mr. Healy. So I think that that there will be numerous inquiries, both by the hospital itself, by the Gardaí, by the HSE, and who knows, obviously health and safety would be involved as well. So I think that this is going to be one that's going to last quite a while, yeah. And hopefully the results of those investigations will be made public so that we can all learn what happened.
It's just horrendous to think that this man has gone through his entire life, almost 90, and to suffer such a violent death, and the difficulty for the family as well. Mr. Healy recently widowed. It's just layer.
Yes.
I mean, there's no need for it to feel any sadder than it is, because it couldn't get any sadder. It's really awful, isn't it?
No, and just imagine now that Mr. Healy's family have now to face into burying their dad less than a month after they buried their mother, and all because of an attack. It wasn't as if it was that he died from natural causes or as a result of being in hospital. He died because of a violent assault by a much younger patient who would be much stronger. And, it's just it's absolutely horrific to think about it. You'd imagine that the family have enough to cope with one bereavement, but now to have a second one. And on top of that, they also had a tragedy back in decades ago when a younger sister actually drowned on a Cork beach, while at a Cork beach. So, the family has, it makes you wonder how they'd even manage to cope with all of this.
I know. What of the arrested man? What happens next? He's currently detained.
He was arrested and he was taken to the Bridewell Guard Station, where he's been held under Section 4 of the Criminal Justice Act, which means that they can hold him for 24 hours. Now, people often wonder why, if he was arrested at 6 o'clock, that he isn't in court, within that 24 hours. But in actual fact, they take different factors into consideration, like, sleep, eating, maybe an examination by a doctor. So there are a lot of factors that can extend that 24 hours legitimately before somebody has to be charged or released. In this case, we haven't heard anything yet about court appearance, but I would assume that at some stage today or tomorrow there would be a court appearance.
Okay, Anne, thanks for your time.
Gardaí actually are treating this as murder, and have a full investigation team working on it.
Yes.
An incident room in the Bridewell Guard Station as well.
Anne, thank you very much for your time this morning. It's greatly appreciated. That's Anne Mooney, who is the Southern correspondent with the Irish Sun. Our focus this Monday, as part of Monday Focus, is making films in Donegal. We're joined in studio by two guests. They are Aideen Doherty, the film office of the film office with Donegal County Council. Good morning, Aideen.
Good morning, Grace.
Thank you so much for joining us. And also Eileen Rafferty, CEO of Errigal Studios. Hi, Eileen.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for having us today.
If you need to send that text, don't worry about me. You crack on. It's only live radio. Come here. Aideen, where are we at, do you think, in terms of what we're doing and where we could actually be in terms of filmmaking here?
Okay, so I suppose the film office was established within Donegal County Council in 2003. And, since that, the council has been very supportive in relation to all of the work that's happening across the county in terms of attracting in film to the county. And we've had great success in that space. When I look back over the last number of years, particularly say since Star Wars and the success that obviously brought to the county in terms of film tourism and the opportunity to enhance other services within the county. It brings film in, but it's expands its offer into many more services across the county. And you know, we're constantly kind of, I suppose, chipping away to ensure that Donegal's kept on the map. And I'd be arguing at the moment that we're like almost like a service industry. Mm. So the piece that we're probably not doing as well as we'd like to do is the piece that is about developing Indigenous capacity and supporting, you know, filmmakers that are here in the county.
So we don't want a situation where the Indigenous, as you describe them, feel they have to go to pastures new to ply their trade, but at the same time we're doing all we can to invite outside productions into Donegal?
Exactly. So I suppose we have provided some level of training, and this weekend, for example, we have another passport production course that's going to be run out here in the county through the National Academies. And we would have done one previously. And really what that gives is exactly what it says. It's a passport into productions. And people who are participating in that will get an opportunity to get on to actual shoots, which is fantastic. But where we see then is that because we don't have our own intellectual property, I suppose, and where we're not creating work within the county itself and making films to the extent that we could be within the county itself, there's a bit of where people have to leave, and that's always a travesty. I mean, everybody should go away, but when they should have also the opportunity to come back and work in their own county. And there are people currently, as a result of COVID, more than anybody else, are kind of saying, why can't I do this at home? And I suppose that's really been the mantra that I'm hearing time and time and again. And when I look across the county at the moment, Greg, there's a huge amount of people living here that have got the capability of pulling all of that together, I suppose. The other thing that you know, that the council has been really good about doing is supporting, insofar as we can within our limitations, the opportunity for people to expand their, you know, careers. We would provide a bursary through Creative Ireland, which is great. And it's also keeping the profile of the county up. If you look at some of the people who've been in here over the last number of years, you know, you've had Pierce Brosnan on his way in now, we've had Liam Neeson, and, you know, we've had Anna Taylor-Joy. You know, so there's people that then talk about how phenomenal their experience has been as a result of coming to the county. And I look at kind of, you know, how Tourism Ireland now have utilised the Derry Girls to launch their international campaign. So it's...
Are we missing a trick, really?
I think so. That's the piece. We're missing a trick. I think that we have all the capability, we've all the skill, we've got all the players. I mean, the AT are doing wonderful work in animation, and they're doing wonderful work around digital media. So it's just about that cohesive piece that's missing at the moment. And that's the piece that I suppose I'm hoping Eileen will tell you a little bit more about from her perspective. And I suppose just in terms by way of introduction, I met Eileen and David from the Bothy at an event that we hosted, a network event. And for years, I've been kind of saying, we need the private sector to lift. We need the private sector to lift. We need the private sector to do more. And they listened and they heard. And I have to say that the work they've put in over this last year has been phenomenal.
Right, Eileen, tell us a little bit about Errigal Studios, your CEO of the company.
Yes, so basically, as Aideen said, myself and David moved home from London about 6 years ago now. And we really, since moving back, we've been working in the industry, and we've really identified a need for a central hub, you know, because there's fantastic people in the county and in the Northwest working within the industry, but they tend to work sort of individually, and they do fantastic work. But a lot of people do that, or they get training, as in passport production, and then there's not enough work for them to stay here. So what we have been trying to do, and what we're going to do, is open a studio. So that will work as a production hub. So basically that will, you know, not only will we sort of attract back our talent and our head of departments, but we will train, you know, so everyone that's coming through the ATU or doing our training, or anyone that wants to side skill or upskill or just get into our industry, they have a chance to do it in our county. So they don't have to go away, and, you know, they can still go away and get the skills and come back. But it's just having that, being able to live here and being able to work here.
Can you live here, work here and make money in this space though? Because a lot of the productions we've talked of and the big names that you've mentioned, they've already funded it. They're just scouting locations to see what supports or breaks they can get locally. It's great to have them here and all of that. But how do we then get to a point through this hub or whatever we might do where people can actually earn a living here? Because obviously people have to buy it or have to pay to see it, or you have to be sponsored to create something, or you have to commission something and be given the job. So how do you see people actually making money from this you know, when we get it right?
Yeah, absolutely. But like Aideen said, we do have all that talent in the county. So we have the writers, we have the producers that can do this, we have the people that can make it, and we have the distributors. So we have it all here. So we just need to bring it together. And, you know, a production, like say one advert, if you were going to make it, will employ up to 150 people for, you know, potentially 4 to 6 weeks. And that's just for the shoot part of it. So there's huge regional benefits, like there's huge employment in this industry. If we can just make it that there is enough work coming in and that we are then making the work ourselves.
So just to help the likes of me not in it, how do you imagine it then? Is it a case that, you know, you pitch or promote to or contact someone like Ford, for example, and say, we can do this spectacular advert for your new Kuga, whatever it might be, storyboard it and all that type of stuff, and then we produce it, shoot it, probably not in that order, and then say, there's the finished product, and that's it. That's employed
And that's for one advert, for example. But what we hope to do is have like recurring stuff like drama, films, you know. So
yeah, Obituary is a really good example of what we're talking about. Obituary's in now in the south of the county. It's, you know, it's going to be in for, you know, 12 weeks.
It's a Hulu.
Huge, yeah, but at the same time, it started small. And we also have TG Cahir are also looking to develop, you know, some IP within the county and utilising... having a TV drama basically based in Donegal now going forward. So what we'd really be saying is that we're trying to find the Donegal stories. You know, they're here, they're in the county, we know they are. We're getting scripts coming in for the passport or for the bursary that are incredible. You know, you could probably take the first 10, no problem. We're giving small amount of money to try and enhance and get those made. And only one script is chosen annually because a decision was made that we'd be far better off to take one of those scripts and do something meaningful with it rather than kind of spreading the money thin and nobody really getting a chance to do anything. There also is fabulous work going on all over the place all the time. You know, so it's not that you're doing something that you have to start creating. It's all there, Greg.
So yeah, we're not starting from ground zero. You were running through what's been happening over the last couple of years. Donegal's on the map.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. And I think that from the Western Seaboard, the frustration is that, again, Donegal is kind of on the periphery. So we don't really get to hear all of the fabulous things that are maybe going on in the rest of the country and some of the plans that are being made, et cetera, et cetera. And the other thing, the opportunity in the border region is incredible. Mm. You know, we're in the border region and that's something that, you know, we have to give consideration to because the likes of Northman, you know, skipped over the border and then Edgar said basically that whenever it came to Northman and all the investments made in Northern Ireland, and the one thing he said was the most incredible place they'd been was the Five Finger Strand. You know, when you have somebody like that saying that internationally,
it's a huge endorsement.
So it's that piece, I suppose, again, that we're talking about. But I suppose to go back to Eileen in terms of, you know, other things the studio potentially can do.
Really.
Sorry.
I'm not just, can I go and have a coffee with you? You take it from me.
Sorry, Greg.
No.
Force nature.
It's actually perfect. I love it. It's great.
Yeah, okay.
Whatever Aideen said, Eileen.
Whatever Aideen said, all of that.
I'm mortified.
No, Aideen is...
I wouldn't want you to feel like that.
Not at all.
It's brilliant.
Thank you.
It helps me out. I really do appreciate it.
And Aideen has done such amazing work. And
as I said
before
we started the interview, I want to make sure that everything is gotten across. Aideen and you, Eileen, are the best people to make sure we do that. So, Aideen, I actually do really appreciate it. I genuinely do. So, Eileen... there is a will amongst everyone to work with this hub, is there? I mean, what are people like in the industry here? Are they, do they like to plough their own trough and you have to convince them that this could be a better way of doing things? Or what's the culture here? Is it open and ready to go?
Yeah, so there's a little bit of that, but mainly because that's what we're used to. You know, we all work on our own. Now, we have been in talks with Udras na Gaeltachta and we're sort of looking at a potential site in Gweedore. You know, and there is great support and there is great will to make this happen. I'm going to New York next week with a group called Awaken Hub, their female founder cohort. So we're going to go and present this. We're looking for funding. We're going to make this happen. You know, so the more people that we can get behind us, the better to do this. We have a really experienced guy from Gweedore, well, from Burtonport, called Benny Gillespie. He's working over in London at the minute. He's mad to get home. He's going to, you know, bring so much work with him. He's worked on Bond, Star Wars, you know, every Netflix series going. And I was just talking to him there this morning and he said there's so many Irish people working in the industry over there, and they want to get home.
You want to talk about their success, of course. It's always such and such a person from such a part of Donegal, and they're doing amazing things.
Exactly, but let's bring them back absolutely.
So your confidence is really achievable. I mean, the move is on now. This can be done, Eileen.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's going to, you
and
know...
The question is, why not? Why?
Exactly.
Shouldn't we?
You know, it can be done in other parts of the country. Like, and we're not... We're going to be like a mid-range studio. You know, we will aim for sort of the medium rate budget. So we're not going to be going up against, you know, all the bigger studios or whatever. But we there is a market there for us. And we are so clear of where we want to position ourselves. We have great support. We just need the money now to build it and to make it happen, you know, and get that momentum that we've already started to build to make sure that just keeps going.
Yeah, and very quickly, it could end up producing a piece of work that just sets the country or the world
absolutely.
On fire.
Derry I mean, that's the, is a good example.
That's the quality of the creators that we
and,
have.
And I think that one of the things we saw as well as recently as last week with the whole Banshees of Inisherin and what's happening in regard to that. What people are really keen to look at are really good stories well told. And, you know, we have everything. We have all of the ingredients that are required in order to make really good work here in the county. So I think that that's the piece that is you know, is most exciting as we move forward.
You know,
in
I think
this
people
industry.
Are a bit of exhausted with what Hollywood now see as being commercially successful.
Exactly.
You know, I think there's, as you've quite rightly pointed out, there is a huge market for.
Huge.
Tell us a story.
And,
I don't need to
and
explode
on Ban Cune,
necessarily.
You know, and Kylie Kuhn is exactly the same.
Exactly,
who would have thought that it would have done as well as it done? And it's a very small, simple, straightforward story with really good quality writing and good quality acting. So I do think that the world, you know, is shifting away from the big blockbuster, you know, not the world, obviously, but there's aspects of the stories that are being told.
I see a little bit like people want how books, physical books are increasingly in popularity. Everyone thought the Kindle would get rid of it. You know what I mean? You know, but not we there's something about the arts and how we consume them that
they help ease back.
You can they help ease back. You can't sort of change us. That's what we want.
Yeah.
What's the Film Office Donegal County Council role in this? Do you see, Aideen?
I think it's really about the support and the drive behind it from, you know, from what the council is currently doing. You know, the support around the actual physical studio itself is to be able to say that, you know, if a site is determined, then that, you know, the services around that would have to be looked at in terms of the county. But, you know, what we continue to do and what will always be the role of council in relation to this is around licences and film permits and about agitating for funding and about providing that lift, the connection into other potential you know, agencies or organisations. It's about acting, I suppose, as a fixer, if you want, in terms of what film is about, that you're there as the, you know, the driving things forward. That's really what the council is about, and seeing how it fits within the whole economic development, tourism offering, and, you know, even from a social and economic sociology point of view as well. Socioeconomic piece is around a social enterprise, and that there's loads of other little spin-offs that can happen for production companies potentially to, you know, develop their own work and then realise it through the studio offering. So
your New York pitch, not terribly tough, I suppose, because there's an awful lot there to make this argument, Eileen.
Absolutely. Like, we see it as a no-brainer. Mm. You know, it has to happen, and we're really, really hoping that we can just get in front of the correct people to try and support this and to get it, you know, over the line. Like, we have it all designed. We know exactly what it's going to be. We have contacts and a network. And, you know, so we have a pipeline of work ready to come into the studio. So it's just now trying to get the building, you know, and sort of to sort of rephrase it. Sort of, they're already coming, so let's build it, you know, and let's build it in Donegal. And let's do it as soon as we can is sort of where we're at. So hopefully, New York is going to be successful for us.
And it's probably obvious, why New York? Why do you have to travel to far-flung places to try and source funding?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, we are looking locally as well, you know, and we are talking to different bodies within the country. There is a real love of Donegal and all things
Irish.
We're
going to use our in our favour.
We're a little bit. Yeah, we are.
We were going to use the word diaspora. Or Donegal people abroad.
Yeah.
Our northwest, you know, friends and families.
Yeah, the Bagara's fine. I don't work for the council because I don't have a filter. That's the problem with me. It's to tap into that.
Yeah. It is. You know, and there's.
And it's brilliant too because not only the success in what we're doing here too, but the timing is great because people would look at the likes of The Banshee and other really successful films.
That's
a huge commercial success, that
huge.
Film.
Huge,
And now with streaming, it's not every solution to success is not a pass a pathway to the cinema, or how totally. Many screens you can get on. Yeah. And we've got, you don't need to do that anymore.
All the different platforms are amazing, you know, so it just means that some of the smaller budget films,
and they've got tons of money.
You know, and that wonderful film that was made here during lockdown, which was an absolute, you know, it flew when nobody really expected to, it, As It Is All by Antonia Campbell Hughes, was wonderful because, I mean, and it's still going. She's getting articles out this week about what's happened and her love of this place, and again, profiling, you know, Donegal and that space. And we look at God's Creatures is getting their cinema release now in March, and it has already done the you know, the States. So it's incredible whenever you look at how these films are being made locally, and you have the local, you know, local boys hanging about, you know, and as extras, and the joy for them to see themselves alongside. I mean, I kind of had a lovely story where a member of staff in Donegal County Council came to me and said, I took a couple of days off work to go down and be an extra in Glenties last year alongside Liam Neeson and Adrian Glenties, you know. So those are the kind of things that are amazing for people to get that experience. Well, I don't know when in the Land of Saints and Sinners, but God's Creatures is, I think it's the 24th of March possibly, into the cinemas. So, you know.
And I suppose for us as well,
Paul
you
Mescal,
know,
by the way, that one.
The studio is like, it's that romanticism of Donegal and Ireland and, you know, the IP creation and all of that. But also we're looking at putting in a virtual production studio into part of the offering. So it will be like cutting edge, you know, and it will have bring, you know, training. We're working with a virtual production market leader in North America at the minute, and they're going to bring like world leading training into Donegal, you know. So the people that we are going to have here are going to be highly sought after.
I mean,
you know,
I can think of four or five people that I would have interviewed that if to imagine if they were to come back and join, you know, you've already just made that sort of return yourself, I mean, to join you and the likes of others, and then to have the backing of Aideen and others as well. I mean,
it can only get stronger and stronger.
Where it could go is limitless, really, to some extent.
And then you have your film, cluster industries that come out of that. So it's like, it's far reaching and very
all
exciting.
All right, it's all very positive. So what's next then, obviously, Aideen or Aideen? You know, you're talking about going out pitching. Is that really, it's sourcing funding. All the ideas are there. The storyboard of a plan is there. It's just a case of getting the money for it.
Absolutely.
Have you set a figure?
We do have a figure. We have two scenarios. One, you know, that we have, you know, some funding from Irish boards or whatever. And then another that is totally private investors.
Which would be bells and whistles, presumably.
Exactly. I mean, it'll be bells and whistles anyway, because we're going to do this properly. It's not going to be like, oh, a little studio that only does, like, you know, it's going to be cutting edge. It's going to be market leading. It's going to be a really, really top class studio. So,
And the location has already been, did you say you're looking at Gwydor?
We have a potential site in Gwydor, and we are in sort of talks with Uda Ross to maybe push that down the line, depending on how that develops.
I could see them seeing that as a really interesting thing to
hopefully
with their
absolutely
All right, okay. Anything else do you think we need to add, Aideen, or is that all covered? Anything coming up, by the way, because you can never tell anything.
Well,
you know, I mean, you could have literally Hollywood decamping on the top of the Bluestack Mountain tomorrow, and it's like, well, you can find out tomorrow evening.
Look, I mean, you know,
are there stuff in the pipeline?
Basically what happens is that, as you well know, Greg, is that, you know, the minute anybody's kind of sniffing about, there are two approaches that can be taken. Depending on where it's being, I suppose, positioned and who's coming, I will immediately have to sign a non-disclosure, or I will be, you know, we do have one actually that's on its way and was supposed to happen in October, November last year. So I can't tell you about that. That's Cry from the Sea.
Okay.
And that's with a Canadian company. And Aideen actually is going to be helping and assisting on that as production. And Ben Gillespie, who she referred to earlier on, is supposed to be coming back. Please God, if we can get it in. You know, so that'll be a very localised piece. And that's the team that did A Shine of Rainbows that really started an awful lot of this for us in terms of how other people saw Donegal. And it's going to be a beautifully shot film as well, and it's a very quintessential Irish story.
Nice.
So we had been working with them for about a year. They're trying to get locations tied down, so we're there or thereabouts. And again, you know, an awful lot depends on getting talent to line up. That's really what it becomes about. You know, they've had a number of names attached to it and gone because the talent isn't lining up for them properly. But that is, I think, March is definitely happening.
And in terms of sort of
Four Letters of Love is in at the moment or on their way in, and that's Pierce Brosnan, so that's quite good.
Yeah,
and then Obituary is starting, and then we also have towards the back end of the year a TV series, and there's always advertisements and other events on their way in.
And local people are very accommodating, aren't they? They've been very good,
you know,
with little road clubs. soldiers and given their towns.
Well, fantastic.
All that. And, you know, that is a big part of what we do. And back in our office, there's Sandra Brennan and Sean Canny, who basically are at the end of the phone oftentimes, who are taking the calls and just saying, and trying to ascertain just what is it exactly people need. And sometimes it's simply that they just need a piece, a steer on something. But the reactionary piece that's really good from Donegal's perspective is because we have five council offices around the county, chances are we can get the information out quicker than most. So whenever the call comes in, we can reach out to a member of our team and say, do you know where there might be a... And sure enough, somebody from the council will be back into us fairly quickly. So having that kind of wide-reaching people in every single town and village across the county has been phenomenal for us. And I can't stress how thankful we are to our engineers and our beach people and environment team and all of that. And also, just even from the point of view of what the National Parks and Wildlife do in Garda Síochána, the amount of services that kind of support around this are quite incredible.
It's a great buy-in.
It's a great buy-in.
If you're starting from scratch, and you go, how are we going to make all this happen? But it happens.
It does happen. And within that, like, I mean, if you look at kind of what the amount of money that's left behind in a community following the likes of God's Creatures or following the likes of It Is In Us All or, and any one of them, you know, there's a huge investment into local economy and a huge investment into small services in towns and villages as they use taxi companies or as they use hardware stores or
accommodation
providers and catering and such things like that.
Yeah, so, and also too, there's logistics like cabins and offices, portable offices and all that kind of stuff that's required to keep all this moving, and that's also money that's often spent locally.
Absolutely, yeah, as local as
you know, that's another element of it that where it's possible, of course. Okay, anything, so this is positive then, we're happy, we're feeling good.
Absolutely, 2023 is going to be a good year.
We're in a good place, right?
Totally.
We're going to get a lot of money out of New York.
Yes, we are.
The world is our oyster, is that it?
That's it.
Absolutely, let's build it.
And thanks for the opportunity, Greg.
Thank you so much, Greg.
It's to recognise, it's great to be speaking about the future from actually a really good position.
Yes.
But then people see that, well, let's not stand still. You always have to be moving forward. Yeah. All right, Eileen Rafferty, CEO of Ergal Studios, best of luck with your trip and continued success
so
with your company and everyone involved. And Aideen Doherty, of the Film Office with Donegal County Council, thank you for calling in. It's been lovely having both of you in, and keep us updated. We want to stay with this. All right,
we'll do.
Back
Thanks,
with
Greg.
More after the break.
Thanks, Milan.
Now, there's certain things I can't watch. I'm quite soft like that. You know, people in crashes or people being abused or animals being abused. But some of you out there will have seen a video of a donkey being dragged along behind a car with a rope tied around its neck, and it's sparked a rescue raid by Gardaí. Seven donkeys were seized in the early morning raid by Gardaí on Saturday after the horrific video emerged. Gardaí and the Leash Offaly Division worked with the charity Hungry Horse Outside and My Lovely Horse Rescue during the raid in the Edenderry area of County Offaly. I believe, and I did see a Twitter post from one of those organisations to show the donkey in being looked after effectively. Kathleen Murray is animal welfare campaigner. Kathleen, thanks for joining us. I suppose this is just a horrendous thing to see, but almost encouraging to see the mass outrage at the treatment of this defenceless animal.
Yes, it is very heartening to see that so many people are awake now and aware of animal cruelty and what is actual cruelty, because in a lot of cases that may have been overlooked, you know, some years back, and just thought, well, you know, that's how we move an animal from one field to another or whatever. But it's just not acceptable anymore. And that poor donkey was terrified, absolutely terrified, and could have had his neck badly damaged by being dragged like that. So, I mean, that's just not acceptable anymore under any circumstances. You know, sometimes you'll hear, well, this is the way we've always done it. But does that make it right? Does that make it, you know, we've moved on. We're now at a different stage. We now understand animals more. And when you've got a terrified animal, you cannot be treating them like that. You can't just drag them along a road. That man would have been far better just walking that donkey beside him, because I'm sure he probably wasn't going that far anyway. And he would have had, the donkey would have been more comfortable, and he would have made better progress, you know.
We catch some of this on camera, and then we have this type of outrage, but there's clearly a group of people out there, sections of society or what have you, that look at this animal and don't see it really as, don't see it as a being, you know, that don't see that it has any value or feelings or feels pain or, you know, I mean, what that must have been going for that poor animal's ahead. We just have to make sure that everyone, this penny drops with everyone, that this is unacceptable.
That's right, because animals are not machines. You can't just switch them on and switch them off and expect them to perform. You know, they get scared. And that animal clearly was not comfortable being behind a car with the exhaust and with everything else and with the noise and other cars coming up around him, and he couldn't turn his head to see around. That must have been an absolutely outright terrifying experience for the animal. And it's just, as I say, it's just not acceptable anymore to have it like that. And if anybody does see cruelty like that, do report it immediately, because people must learn and they must move on, you know, and treat animals better, because animals do so much for us. But what do we do for them in return? Is this how we treat them? I don't think so.
Right. So, I mean, you and what we're trying to do here as well is about education, Kathleen, you know, to sort of call this out, to say it's unacceptable, to make someone who might think this is OK to think twice and not do it. Then there is the sort of the carrot, I suppose. The stick then is how this is treated in terms of legality and what have you. I think we are making progress, aren't we, in terms of proven animal cruelty, people suffering really quite severe sanctions. Is that a fair enough assessment?
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, the Gardaí are brilliant. They're great at getting these things sorted now as well. The ISPCA are dealing with this all the time, every day of the week. You know, there's a lot of cruelty still out there. There's a lot of ignorance still out there. Sometimes people are actually unaware of what they're doing, you know, and they need to be educated as well. Some people know well what they're doing and couldn't care less. So you've got all kinds of levels of society to filter through. But as I say, you know, all the authorities in animal welfare in Donegal work together, and they're really good about sorting out things like this. Legalities, everything has to be done legally and above board. So, you know, you have to go through courts, you have to sort this out properly. But on the bottom line, you know, the public are brilliant because they report it. And if they didn't report it, half of it wouldn't be known at all. So anywhere you see it, there's another report now of an ARS in Cork who has just been closed down for, you know, a puppy farm.
Yeah.
And because the conditions there were horrendous as well for all the dogs. She had, you know, a lot of dogs down there and they weren't being treated properly at all. You know, they didn't have proper bedding. They didn't have clean water. There was contamination in their bowls. Their fur was matted. People are buying pups from these places, not realising, you know, what they're actually buying. They're looking at a very cute, fluffy puppy. But if you looked at the state of the mother, you know, that's what you need to be seeing. You need to be seeing behind the scenes in these places, you know. And that's what I'm saying. There's a lot of cruelty still under the surface that people are not actually seeing. So you need to be doing background checks on
everything.
Well,
that's it, because we have, you know, I mean, obviously, as, you know, places that look after cats or donkeys or dogs or whatever it is, we clearly have more of these animals in this country than there are people who will properly care for them. So that's a trend that's continuing. We then have to look at how do we stop that? What do we do then to stop having a place that needs to look after 200 or 300 donkeys, that needs to look after a whole host of greyhounds, that needs to walk and feed dogs, that needs to look after cats and other animals as well? How do we break the cycle, Kathleen? Because it kind of feels like Groundhog Day, do you know what I mean? And I love talking to you, and I'm sure you're frustrated by having the same conversations. At what point do we break this cycle of to ensure that as much as we can, we have 100% responsible animal ownership?
Yeah, well, I've been at this, I say, for well over 20 years now at this stage, and there has been a lot of improvements in some areas, but we're still as far back in other areas. What's happened is where there have been improvements and things as well, the population is also growing year by year as well. So there are more and more animals coming onto the county year by year. More people are getting dogs. More people are getting cats, but they're still not looking after them properly. The majority of people are definitely trying to do their best. They are trying to educate themselves. They're online looking for tips and hints about everything. But there is still this undercurrent, as I say, of either ignorance or people who don't want to do it or can't be bothered doing it or just see an animal as something that still runs about. You let it out and it goes where it wants and does what it wants, and that poor animal suffers as a result. There needs to be, you know, the Gardaí are doing a great job, but it does come down to enforcing the law at the end of the day. There are laws there to protect animals, and they do need to be enforced. But as we all know, you know, there's a lot of manpower problems, there's financial problems. You know, everybody's, you know, dragging themselves along, basically, these days, trying to, you know,
And there's lots of people that take on an animal that didn't really know everything that entailed. So there's an educational element to it as well. Kathleen, thank you so much for joining us. I really do appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Kathleen Murray, who is an animal welfare campaigner. Don't forget, John Breslin's coming up around the Northwest with you very, very shortly. So don't go anywhere. Stay tuned for that. The usual mix of music and chat. A caller says you should not let anyone install a smart meter as you cannot avail of a cheaper rate of electricity at any time of the day once they are installed. Well, there are specific, I'm not contradicting you, but there are specific right rates that you can avail of on a smart meter. But I looked at them and your general rate is more expensive. So in other words, you'd have to jump through quite a few hoops to save money. Caller wants to know if the Ombudsman can be contacted to report workplace bullying if the bullying is taking place by the management. I'm not sure if you're working in the public-private sector, it might not be. But there are other avenues, by the way, for you to pursue things like that. Right, OK, listen, thanks to all of you who listened to the programme, who watched the show, and all of you who texted in or called in, or if you just sat and listened or worked and listened or whatever way you did, it really is appreciated and it keeps us going. And so thank you very much indeed for that. I want to thank Caroline Orr, who researched and produced the programme. And I also want to say, have a great Monday, and we look forward to rejoining you for another 9 till noon show tomorrow, Tuesday morning from 9.